new treatment for hepatitis C, a new test for heart failure, therapeutic hypothermia for pediatric cardiac arrest, and we're going to take a look at hyperthyroidism. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. If you're a brand new listener to The Nursing Show as we enter our first episode of 2010, I want to remind you that you can head over and check out all of the links and information we talk about in each episode over at our website, nursingshow.com. Over there, you'll find a link right at the top of the page for show notes. You can click on that and go back from the most recent episode and back in time to each other episode we've produced over the last several years, and you'll be able to follow up on anything that you've heard in the show. It's important that we do that because we want to make sure you have the best information possible. We can only cover highlights and brief topics here, and it's important for you to find out how that brief information applies to your specific practice as a nurse, as a student, or as an educator. And I want to make sure that you have all the resources you need to do that. And so we provide that in the show notes for you. If you're a long-term listener, well, you know that you're a valuable part of the community, and we love to hear from you. I love getting emails from each and every one of you. Send in those emails directly to comments@nursingshow.com. You can also send in your comments via Facebook or Twitter. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/podmedic. You can also find me over at Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic as well. I love hearing from listeners with ideas, suggestions for shows, questions about episodes, or corrections especially. I mean, I'm not perfect, and if I make a mistake, we want to make sure that the best possible information is put out here for the listeners of The Nursing Show. Time to jump on into the news, and I'll lead off with a promising story regarding hepatitis C treatment. Now, hepatitis C, as many of us know, any of us who've been around in healthcare for some time, know that this is a particularly insidious bloodborne pathogen that affects not only IV drug users and other individuals involved in some suspect activities, but is also more prevalent among the healthcare community because it is more easily contracted than something such as HIV. And so, therefore, there are a lot of healthcare professionals out there at all levels that have contracted hepatitis C as a result of treating patients and have gotten needle sticks or other exposures. And so it's always good news when we find out there are ways to successfully at least treat or handle hepatitis C. And a new treatment that is on the verge of being tested in people is a treatment that basically adds a special, what's called a durable DNA molecule. And this DNA molecule blocks the ability of the hepatitis C virus RNA to replicate itself in healthy livers. And so if you are an infected individual and you put this drug in the system, hypothetically, it could reduce the ability of the hepatitis C virus to replicate and would lower viral levels in the livers of individuals who are infected. It also seems to be able to increase susceptibility of the virus once it's been weakened to other antiviral treatments. And so this, while not directly a cure for hepatitis C, may enable other treatments to effect a cure. And so we're hopeful. And this is something that I will be following up on as I hear more about it. There's a link in the show notes over to the article at webmd.com. I would urge you to check it out. It's something to keep up on and it's something that we can hopefully use to treat healthcare professionals who have contracted this disorder and disease and are able and enable them to become healthy and back and enable them to enter back into the healthcare field if they choose to do so, if they're not currently practicing. Also found another interesting article on a new screening test for patients with heart disease that could pick up on undiagnosed lung disorders. And this is a problem with a lot of people with heart disease. They may also have a chronic lung problem that has been underlying the problems they're having with their cardiac disorder, and the underlying heart failure is covering up the heart failure is covering up this underlying lung disorder. So there has been a test, a breathing test, that has been put in practice by and released in a recent article in the British Thoracic Society's winter meeting. And the researchers said that heart patients that are screened using this breathing test, they spotted lung disease presence earlier and were able to treat it more quickly and effectively. And it actually was able to, what they said, significantly improve overall health outcome. And this is something we need to be aware of in the nursing field, simply because as these types of things become available to help screen patients, we should be watching our patients, understanding who out there is at risk for heart disease, patients that are at risk for heart failure, and that we can follow up with these patients and make sure that they are aware of other available pre-screenings that can help avoid a lung disorder as well. And so we don't have a concurrent pulmonary problem associated with the cardiac problem. And because those two systems are so integrally linked in the body, we really, anything we can do to affect the health of one will significantly affect the health of the other. And I think that that's something that we need to be keeping track of. So I'll be following up on this. But this is really looking at patients that might have early stages of COPD, such as emphysema or bronchitis. And if we can treat those illnesses before they progress to the point where they are completely irreversible, we can help these patients be much healthier in the long run. Of course, patients have to be willing to change some of their lifestyles and habits, but that is something that we constantly deal with many of our patients. But it's certainly, if we can get an early leap on the situation, we may be able to give them the information they need to make that change in their life earlier, rather than waiting until it becomes a completely debilitating situation. Finally, good news for critically ill and injured pediatric patients. There's going to be a study begun on whether therapeutic hypothermia for cardiac arrest patients who are pediatric patients will be enacted soon. This study being funded and put in place by the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute is the first broad multi-center trial of therapeutic hypothermia as an effective treatment for pediatric cardiac arrest patients. This has been understood and tested and found to be very effective for adult cardiac arrest patients, greatly improving the patients who actually walk out the door of the hospital after being admitted following a cardiac arrest incident. And this is something that has not been tested in pediatric patients. So it is something that has shown some improvement for adults, but will that improvement translate for pediatric patients? And so this study is going to be looking at that. It's going to be headed by New York Columbia University Medical Center researchers, as well as other researchers at the Presbyterian Morgan Stanley Children's Hospital, and others in a couple of other centers around the country. And this is something that I'll be looking forward to and following up on. I'm supposed to be doing a training session on therapeutic hypothermia for my other podcast, the MedicCast, for paramedics and EMTs. This is something that's starting to be used in the field by the EMS providers out there, and it's something that a lot of you probably have started to see being used in surgical centers, in operating suites, as well as in emergency departments. And we're hopeful that this may provide an equal boost to survivability for pediatric patients, because, of course, the outcomes when pediatric patients do go into cardiac arrest, the outcomes are not good, and we certainly would like to do anything we can to improve the survivability of this terrible event for these patients. And this may indeed improve outcomes. We'll find out as this study progresses. If you have any questions or comments on any of these news articles, of course, you can find the links in the show notes at nursingshow.com. I also urge you to get back in touch with me, either leave a comment over at the Nursing Show site, or you can also get in touch with me directly. Send those emails in to comments@nursingshow.com. Tip of the week, hyperthyroidism, and that means that we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of different things. First off, we're going to lead off with a review of the thyroid anatomy and physiology, including the thyroid hormones and calcitonin. We're also going to look at common signs and symptoms and causes of hyperthyroidism, including some assessments and lab values you should keep an eye out for. And we're going to look at, of course, treatments and nursing interventions for patients with hyperthyroidism. The thyroid gland itself, well, let's do a little brief review here. A lot of you probably already know this, but it doesn't hurt. I call it a butterfly-shaped gland. It has two lobes that are situated so that it kind of lies across and on either side of the thyroid cartilage, also known as the voice box or Adam's apple. And it lies right there near the surface of the anterior neck. And so you can actually visually see if there's some swelling in some cases of the thyroid gland. Definitely palpate it. And in patients with severe hyperthyroidism or Graves' disease or some other causes of hyperthyroidism or enlargement of the thyroid gland, we will see goiter or a visible swelling around the neck as the thyroid enlarges and swells up and shows that you know what's called a goiter right in front of the neck. And you'll see that in some patients that have problems with their thyroid. Thyroid gland produces a couple of different hormones, three hormones, and two of them are known collectively as the thyroid hormones, T4, known as thyroxine, and T3, triiodothyronine. These are released by the thyroid gland and are used by the body to stimulate metabolism. And in developing fetuses, very valuable also in the development of the brain. So this is a gland that has multiple uses, but in the adult human, it is used as a way to increase metabolism. And of course, if you have too much of this being produced, then you can have a greatly increased metabolism, and we'll talk about that in signs and symptoms. Also, you should understand that, like so much of the endocrine system, these two hormones are stimulated to be released by another hormone from the pituitary gland, thyroid-stimulating hormone, which in turn is induced by a hormone from the hypothalamus. But we'll could go into a whole endocrine system thing here if we start going off into how everything interacts. But you should understand that the thyroid gland can be problems with the thyroid gland can come from other parts of the endocrine system. If there's a problem with a release of a TSH by the pituitary gland, or you have an underlying pituitary disorder or hypothalamus problem, you could have problems with release of your thyroid hormones, although usually that would cause hypothyroidism. We also have calcitonin, which is released by the thyroid gland, and the calcitonin is a hormone that is actively involved in the balance of calcium and phosphorus in the bloodstream. As calcium levels increase, calcitonin is released and stimulates the body to not absorb as much calcium from the bone and to reduce the absorption of calcium from the GI tract. And so this is working obviously directly opposite parathyroid hormone. Parathyroid hormone is involved when there are low calcium levels. It stimulates absorption of more calcium from the GI tract and release of calcium and phosphorus from the bone stores that are available in the body. What are some of the causes of hyperthyroidism? Well, the number one cause of hyperthyroidism is a disorder called Graves' disease, and we'll talk about Graves' disease specifically in another section here, but they should understand that that is one of the number one causes. Also, injury or infection can cause a inflammation of the thyroid hormone or thyroid gland, and it can, this inflammation can cause an increased release of thyroid hormone into the system, causing localized and limited hyperthyroidism for a shorter period of time, and usually self-resolving. So again, that inflammation can cause that. Also, people who have had problems with hypothyroidism can overdose on their thyroid hormone medication. And if they do that, of course, this is going to cause a hyperthyroid state. And we should be aware of that. This is a side effect of taking these medications for patients who have chronic hypothyroidism. So we should just keep that in mind. Let's look at Graves' disease, which is the single number one cause of hyperthyroidism. Graves' disease is an autoimmune disorder. The body begins to attack the thyroid gland, and in the process of doing so, causes the thyroid gland to release large amounts of thyroid hormones, T3 and T4 released in larger amounts, and this causes an increased metabolism throughout the body, and so you have patients that will exhibit the signs and symptoms we're going to talk about here in a minute. But generally, bad heat tolerance, patients with increased appetite, often accompanied with weight loss because they're eating more, but they're also burning off a lot more. And so you can sometimes you don't see weight loss, but in many cases that seems to be the case with prolonged problems with these patients. Also, cardiac issues, dysrhythmias, and palpitations are all associated with this. It's much more common in women. I've seen numbers relating this to be about 8 to 1 women to men, and is people are much more at risk for Graves' disease if they are pregnant, if they have a history of smoking or family history of Graves' disease, they can have a greater risk for developing Graves' disease. Most commonly, it shows up between the ages of 20 and 50. It seems like after a certain age, it seems to be related directly to childbearing age. So women that are in that age range are much more likely to have Graves' disease than others. What are some of the signs and symptoms? I talked about briefly a couple of them. Nervousness, increased appetite, weight loss, palpitations. Sometimes some tremors in the extremities can be visible. These patients can be very anxious at times. You might see this, the classic bulging eyes of someone with a long-term hyperthyroidism, exophthalmos. I hope I pronounced that correctly, but you know, it's another one of those medical terms. You need to, anybody who remembers the actor Marty Feldman, was a classic case of hyperthyroidism. He had bulging, very prominent eyes. And you can picture that person. You can picture a patient with this particular sign of hyperthyroidism. Also, patients experience late in the day weakness and fatigue, generally associated with the fact that they're just burning up more than they're taking in. So you should note this. And again, this is tends to be later in the day, not early in the day. And so it's usually related to not able to take in enough to keep up with what they're burning up. This is not to be confused with hypothyroidism, who are just generally lethargic because they just don't feel like doing anything because their metabolism has been dialed way down. Also, because of metabolism increase, this metabolic increase in stimulation to the system, we have patients with tachydysrhythmias, tachycardias, including AFib, and they can develop congestive heart failure because these tachycardias are developing to the point that they have other underlying cardiac problems. At the same time, they can not be effectively pumping and creating enough cardiac output, and that backs up into the lungs. Some other signs and symptoms, patients will experience facial flushing. Again, we talked about the goiter earlier. You'll see signs of that on large thyroid gland, either visibly or on palpation. Amenorrhea, unusual or messed up menstrual cycles. GI disturbances, including diarrhea. And heat intolerance and profuse sweating. They just don't tolerate the heat very well because they're burning up a lot inside, and they just don't have any, they're not being able to really monitor or regulate their body heat very effectively. Something to be aware of, and it's a very serious situation, is thyroid storm. This is a sudden onset of hyperthyroidism. Patients have a sudden release of massive amounts of thyroid hormone, causing a massive influx of increased metabolism stimuli, and this can be very serious, fatal if not treated and recognized and treated promptly. Increased body temperature, so greater than 101 and increase beyond that. And of course, long-term increased body temperature can cause its own problems. Also, tachycardias. And so you really need to recognize if someone has suddenly started experiencing signs and symptoms of hyperthyroidism, they should be checked out and assessed very carefully. Also, they may present with altered mental status associated with the increased body temperature and tachycardia, presenting with a sudden onset of altered mental status or delirium. Some of the lab values we're going to be looking for if you have patients that need to be tested. Serum thyroid-stimulating hormone, serum-free thyroxin, serum T3, T4, also thyroid antibodies, thyroglobulin, radioactive iodine uptake test, and they may have a needle aspiration biopsy of the thyroid gland. And so all of these labs and tests could be performed on your patient, and you should familiarize yourself with them in your facility and help prepare your patient, educate them about what's going on. Also, a thyroid scan is a radiological test of the thyroid x-ray, and so you should be aware that this is available as well. Treatment of hyperthyroidism really comes down to a couple of things. Pharmaceutical treatment would be the first line, but also irradiation of the thyroid and surgical removal of the thyroid in extreme cases. Although, you know, I think the first line treatment would be medication treatment. If there's medications that can reduce or inhibit thyroid hormone production, that would be the first choice. However, patients can also take in radioactive iodine. And by taking in the radioactive iodine, it really, the body takes iodine and gets it right into the thyroid gland, because that's where it's a key, iodine's key in formulating the thyroid hormones. By taking in irradiated iodine, it will rapidly destroy the thyroid hormone production centers in the thyroid gland. And so this can be a very targeted approach towards treating patients with a hyperthyroid disorder. And then finally, surgery may be an option if none of the other treatments are working effectively. The problem with surgery is that the parathyroid glands are integrated and closely associated with the thyroid gland and are not always easily distinguishable. And so it is not uncommon to accidentally remove parathyroid glands at the same time a surgical removal of the thyroid gland occurs. And that would cause its own host of endocrine issues. And the patients would need to then replace not only thyroid hormones, but parathyroid hormones as well. Some of your common nursing interventions. Well, you need to help your patients with nutritional therapy and support. These patients, before and during treatment, may be experiencing increased appetite and weight loss, or for some patients, increased appetite without weight loss. And so if they are not burning it up as fast and are not working it off and yet are still feeling very hungry, obviously they're going to gain a lot of weight. So they need a lot of nutritional support, referrals to a dietitian, and working with them and their family members on healthy eating habits. They may need emotional support. Again, these patients are very nervous and anxious and upset and frightened about what's going on. And we need to make sure we're providing that emotional support and appropriate referrals for them as well, and understanding what's going on for them and their families. We need to carefully monitor patients' vital signs always, but specifically body temperature. Patients who are hyperthyroid disorders are going to be at danger and are at risk for an increased or dangerously increased body temperature. Again, going back to that thyroid storm, we want to make sure that we're monitoring their body temperature, and we may need to take steps to cool them down with some kind of antipyretic or some kind of external stimulus, such as even something as like a lukewarm shower. We just need to be prepared to help our patients with these things. We want to monitor them carefully for any complications associated with any of the treatments. So whether it's a radiation or a surgical side effects and complications or complication side effects for the common medications, we definitely want to be prepared for that. Don't forget to follow up on the links in the show notes. I have some excellent links there to some resources over at the National Institutes of Health, including a great resource for you over at the National Endocrine and Metabolic Diseases Information Service. So you'll definitely want to find those links in this week's episode show notes. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. Time to close out this show, the first show of 2010, with PodSafe music, as I always do. This week, I have a song by a band, Samuel Ventura is the artist, and this is his song, Strawberry Soda. Played it before on the show, if you've been listening for a while, and you can find out more in the show notes. There's a link there as well to pick up this song over at iTunes, and it's a great way to show support for these independent artists. Spend 99 cents, go over and show them your support, and thank them for sharing their excellent music with the rest of us here on podcasts like The Nursing Show. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, wishing you a happy new year as we roll into 2010 and reminding all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care. Pick a star from the big and black sky. Make a wish, but don't aim too high. Expectations leave you waiting round. And I've been waiting, being pretty patient. Known invitations upon champagne and this girl's gonna make me lose my mind. And then I wrote her, told her to come over. We'll drink Coca-Cola, strawberry soda, and we'll talk about our stupid lives. My life's been exactly how my night's been. A little lonely, but I feel alright when I get around to pouring myself a drink. Na 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 na, na 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 na, na 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 na. Well, I've got a feeling today is gonna be alright.
Be alright. Na 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 na. the rotor. Told her to come over. We'll drink Coca-Cola, strawberry soda. We'll talk about our stupid lives. But don't aim too high. Nothing ever seems to go my way.